Where the Bodies Are Buried contains graphic depictions of violence that some listeners may find disturbing. Discretion is advised.
My name is Phil Chalmers, and this is Where the Bodies Are Buried.
The devil is on my side, getting you away from me.
Joining me is my producers, Adam and Samantha.
On this episode of Where the Bodies Are Buried, we're speaking with Los Angeles gang member turned serial killer Chester Turner. This monster sits in San Quentin Prison in California after being convicted of raping and killing 14 women, one of which was pregnant. But his real number of murders remains unknown, even to himself.
You have a prepaid call from an inmate at a California corrections facility, San Quentin State Prison.
Chester Turner.
Hey, how you doing?
A man of his word, calling me on Saturday night.
Always a man of my word.
So, is it okay if I record you tonight?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so we're talking to Chester Dwayne Turner. Chester Turner is basically one of the most prolific serial killers in Los Angeles history. His nickname, the media has dubbed him the Southside Slayer. Now, if you Google the name Southside Slayer, there's a couple people who have been nicknamed the Southside Slayer, but mainly it's Chester Turner and another guy named Michael Hughes. Chester Turner, you are in a prison that is kind of infamous. San Quentin, California, death row. And we're going to talk about that later. What is it like to be on death row in San Quentin, California? But let's go way back. You were born in 1966. You were born in Arkansas. Tell us about your upbringing, your childhood, and your family.
I was born in Arkansas.
Right.
And my mother brought me out here to California when I was 5 years old.
So 5 years old, you moved to California. What area, like L.A. or yeah. Where?
L.A., South Central.
Damn, you went right into the hotbed, yeah. South Central.
Exactly.
Fuck.
Exactly.
And your dad scooted, so you had a father, but he scooted, so then you moved out with your mom.
No. The situation with that, the reason why my mother left, left Arkansas, because my father was abusive when he drank.
Okay. To understand what kind of killer Chester Turner is, we need to understand South Central Los Angeles in the 1980s and the early 1990s. The issues they were dealing with in Los Angeles at that time, there's a crack epidemic, there's a gang epidemic, there is riots happening, and homicide is at an all-time high in the United States. I believe at that time we had 16,000 plus murders in the United States. South Central Los Angeles is one of the toughest areas you can grow up in. Unbelievably, Chester Turner grows up in that neighborhood. He knows violence, he knows drugs, and he knows gangs. Some people claim that Chester Turner is the most prolific serial killer in Los Angeles history. I believe he is as well. He's convicted of 15 murders. One of his victims he killed was 6 months pregnant. So he was charged with two murders in that case. Since then, they've dropped the murder charges of the unborn baby, and his number now sits at 14. But I believe he's killed way more. He has hinted to me that the numbers are much higher. I will not be surprised if Chester Turner has killed between 30 and 50 victims. That would make him one of the most prolific killers, not only in Los Angeles history, but he would be one of the most deadly killers in all of America. Here's the crazy thing. Chester Turner right now is in appeals, and he is waiting to see how his appeal turns out, as if he has a chance to walk out of prison. So because he's in appeals, he really doesn't want to talk about his crimes or make himself look guilty. But we're going to push Chester as much as we can to see if we can get anything out of him. Maybe he will talk about his crimes. We're going to do our best to get Chester Turner to talk to us.
So he's denying all these murders that he was convicted of. He has multiple death penalty sentences.
It's kind of nuts to think a killer like this could actually go and appeal everything he's been convicted of.
You're not only facing life, but death. The only hope you have is an appeal. And if you put yourself in that position, you would say, I get what he's doing. It's his only hope of ever having freedom. And so you hope that some miraculous thing happens. The judge was dirty or something went wrong and boom, they're going to free you from prison. So you have to hang on to that appeal. It's your only hope in life. A lot of guys, when they lose their appeal, they kill themselves in prison.
Now, what are the chances anything will happen from this appeal?
Nothing. The chance of anything happening with this appeal got to be like 1%. Like, it would have to be a miraculous occasion. Also, what Chester Turner's hoping for, that in the state of California, they eliminate the death penalty. The death penalty has been eliminated in half the states or more, and he's hoping that California follows suit. His biggest concern is he doesn't want to be executed. So if his appeals are over, he automatically gets life without parole. And that's the best news he can have.
So basically, you know, as I was 5 years old, I grew up in South Central L.A. Living in South Central L.A., it's like it was real rough back when I was growing up. I was the only child to 1980. So it was like just me, my mother, and we growed up between off of Colden, between Hoover, and it's like it was real rough over there. You hear a lot of shooting. I mean, it's the neighborhood is full of prostitutes, drugs, everything that was going on. I was going to school, so it was like having fights. At school, then after school, then I was into a lot of fights. I didn't have like a brother or a big sister or a father figure to really look up to. Mm-hmm. So it was like my mother was always at work. She never was on welfare. She always had a job. So she did her best to take care of me, have a babysitter and all that.
You were kind of alone. You were kind of raised alone.
Exactly.
If you weren't raised in that situation, a lot of people can't even fathom what that's like. What's that like as a child being raised in that neighborhood?
Well, you know, as a child being raised up in that neighborhood, you know, it's like I hearing gunshots every night. When I go outside to play. I got to play as a kid. I got to play right there in the apartments because never know when you might be hit by a stray bullet or somebody they might just want to jump you. They just jump you because, hey, you're different. You're not in a gang, but they still want to jump you.
Yeah.
And I turned and looked for that father figure by joining the gang. And when I joined the gang, it's like, hey, look, I'm looking at the money being made. I'm looking at, hey, this is my neighborhood. This is what I represent. Mm-hmm. This is my family now. Because I didn't have nobody to look back at.
You joined a gang, the Hoover Crips. And what was your gang name?
My first nickname, they call me, same as my street name is Tutu.
That's what they call you?
T-U-T-U. It was a rough time. In the beginning, it was fun and everything. I wind up going to juvenile hall because one of my homeboys tried to stab me with a box cutter, so I had to knock him out. And when I was picking up the box cutter, he ran up on me, so I wind up cutting him across the stomach, and I wind up going to juvenile hall.
Did you get cut in that sequence?
No, I didn't get cut. I didn't get cut then.
Okay.
That happened way later on in 1988.
So tell people why. When people see you, you have a big scar on your face. How did that happen?
Yes. Basically, I was out in the hood. You know, I was selling dope on the corner. It was late at night. As three individuals walked up to me and they wanted to buy some drugs. So I'm like, as I was pulling out my sack, my dope sack, to serve them. Mm-hmm. And that's when one tried to rob me. When he was trying to rob me, we got into a fight. But while I was fighting one, and then I was fighting another one, the next thing, I didn't realize that I got hit across the face and across the hand twice with a straight razor or a box cutter. I don't know what it was. Mm-hmm. And I had on my white feeler jacket. I was only about five blocks away from the house. So I walked to the house. By the time I got to the corner, and it's nighttime, I was wondering why I'm sweating. Then when I reached up to feel my face and looked at my hand, seen blood, and looked at my jacket, blood all over.
Now you have a scar on your face.
Correct.
So Chester, how do you go from being a bouncing baby boy like every other baby born to sitting on death row? How in the hell does that happen?
Yeah, I didn't have the education like everybody else had. And so I had to hustle and support my family. So in other words, I had to go out here and do what I had to do. I mean, because I couldn't get a high-paying job or anything like that. So as I'm out there making money, it comes with the game. I mean, with the money, game banging, everything. I mean, it's not... If you never experience or been out there, you never realize how life is. Mm-hmm. I can't afford. I'm not going to sit there and let my kids, let my rent and everything don't get paid. I mean, it ain't the landlord ain't going to say, hey, you can stay here. So I got to do what I got to do. You know?
So Chester will call us back. When he calls back, I'm going to push him a little bit, more than I have before. I'm going to push him about some of his crimes. And he may tell me he can't talk about it, and that's okay. But him and I have gotten pretty close in the last few months. His plan is to tell me about all his murders, but he's probably killed 30 or more. Which would make him not only one of the most prolific killers of Los Angeles, California history, but obviously one of the most dangerous killers in the United States history.
Phil, since Chester won't talk to us much about his crimes, can you tell us a little more about them?
Chester Turner targeted homeless women, drug-addicted women, and sex workers. His MO was to strangle them after sex, strip them naked, and dumped their bodies. For much of his life, he kept some sort of normalcy. Like he had a girlfriend, he had children. But at some point, he went off the deep end. He got involved in gang activity and joined a gang, the Hoover Crips. And he started committing violent crimes. He was in and out of prison for different kinds of crimes and rapes and assaults. But then he starts something that will shock and haunt Los Angeles forever. He begins the Southside Slayer crime spree. The cases that we know start in March of 1987, and he commits a string of strangulation murders where the bodies are found strangled, partially nude, and dumped all over Los Angeles. He committed the crimes that we know of in March of 87, October of 87, January of 89, September of 89, April of 93, May of 93, February of 95, November of 96, February of 98, and April of 98. There's no way Chester Turner took those kind of breaks while committing this crime spree. That's why I believe his numbers can be really, really high. Like, I really believe his numbers are much higher than we're seeing. There's no way Chester Turner takes a year off, 6 months off, not doing these kind of crimes. He is addicted to this. He's addicted to the rape aspect. He's addicted to the strangulation aspect. And he probably enjoys the dumping of the bodies.
I have a question on that. You know, you being an expert on how these guys work, why do some serial killers prey on people who are the most vulnerable, like on sex workers and drug addicts who are obviously in such vulnerable communities? Is it because there's some anger from his childhood against women who sell their bodies? I'm just so curious why this is his MO, because obviously I mean, this is a very different community of women who might not be looked for in the same way as like a 15-year-old girl from a family that loves her and is going to like report her missing right away.
Yes, Chester Turner is angry about something. He's been dumped by a couple of women. He's been dumped by a couple girlfriends. He's been dumped by a couple baby mamas, is what he told me. And so I believe the anger he has is against those women. He decides to choose victims that we call in the business, they are less dead. You have victims that are more dead and victims that are less dead. If you abduct a college co-ed or a homemaker in a suburb or a teacher or somebody like that, those are really very high profile cases. But if you target homeless women, you target sex workers and drug users, they are considered less dead. Now, I don't believe anybody's less dead, but that's what they're considered. When we come back, we're going to continue talking to Chester Turner, and we're going to see how far we can push him to get him to talk about his crimes. If you're looking for more serial killer and true crime content, check out my YouTube channel at True Crime Phil. We are talking to Chester Turner, the Southside Slayer, a serial killer of at least 15 victims. We've talked to him about his rough childhood in South Central Los Angeles. Chester says he doesn't want to talk about his crimes because he's appealing them to try to avoid the death penalty. But we're going to push him as hard as we can to see if we can get him to talk about some of the aspects, to see if we can get anything out of him. All right, Chester, we're back. And I asked you a question. I said, do you ever sit down in your bunk at night and say, how in the hell did I end up here?
When I was coming up, you know, I was like a mama boy. Mm-hmm. I started hanging out with the wrong crowd in the streets. And I wound up going to juvenile justice center, going to court. And I wound up, man, I didn't get no time. They didn't send me to YA. I got probation for it.
Right.
But, you know, I had to go to Las Vedrina. That's the longest 2 months I had to stay locked up as a kid, first time.
Mm-hmm. How old were you?
I was 16.
Okay.
I came home, and it's like, that was the first sign of me getting in trouble. It was like every time you look around, I was fighting. And it was like, all the way to when I got to 18 is when I really experienced when I went to L.A. County Jail, when I went to our jail. Mm-hmm. So our jail is like, it's like totally worse than prison. It's like, it's more, it kind of made, start building a character in me, making me more like an animal, hostile. Then you have to deal with the deputies. Beat you up, killing you. There's so many murders in the L.A. County. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, every time I look around, it was like I was going back and forth. It's like I never stayed out the county jail in a year and a half, sometimes 6 months.
Right.
I was always going back and forth. Then after that, it was like in my head, I'm young, I'm in my 20s, and it's like, hey, it's like adrenaline. It's like being a thrill seeker. Mm-hmm. You consider being the man if you've been to prison.
Right.
So you get back on the streets, oh, yeah, I've been to prison. You know, you meet a lot of people that, you know, probably live in the same area that you live. So my life started going downhill after that.
So then you were kind of on the streets, probably messing with drugs and interacting with maybe sex workers. And, you know, I'm going to dance around this a little bit, but if you really committed the murders that you're convicted of, you're one of the most prolific killers in L.A. And I believe that there's more, because there's no way somebody doing what you're doing takes those long of breaks. At the time of your crimes, were you working for a Domino's Pizza? Was that your job?
Well, yeah, at the time I was out there, I was working at Domino's Pizza. That was my first job.
Okay.
I was working at Domino's when I was 17, 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only job, you know, that I could qualify because of my education. And I was also doing that and selling drugs on the side, making money.
Were you delivering pizzas?
Yes, I was delivering pizzas. I learned how to be a delivery pizza manager, do everything.
They say your crimes were committed between 1987 and 1998, which is an 11-year period. Is that accurate? Were your crimes committed between 1987 and 1998?
Basically, yes. I guess that's what they say.
11-year period. What year did you get arrested and go to prison? What year was that?
Got arrested was in 2000.
In 2000? Okay.
Yeah, 2000. I was in Jamestown. So I was in Jamestown State Prison.
Okay.
Then 2004, that's when they came and got me out of Jamestown. And they took me back to L.A. County. I was in L.A. County from 2004 to 2007. That's when I got here to death row, 2007.
Okay.
Then 3311, I came and got me again to take me back down to L.A. County for ad charge for four more
murders, right?
Yeah.
I think you're convicted of 14 or 15 murders. How many murders are you convicted of?
14. I do believe one was they dropped one murder.
Because it was a woman that was pregnant, right?
Correct.
So they dropped that. You went from 15 to 14. And I know we're not talking about really going to talk about seriously your cases or whatever, but just for me, you're convicted of 14 or 15. How many murders do you think you've committed? Just give me a number.
That's a hard question.
If you were going to guess, how many?
I really can't answer that.
30?
I really maybe, I don't know.
Okay. Chester, and a lot of your victims, they were like homeless or sex workers or drug addicted, you know, prostitutes or drug addicted people. And a lot of them were strangled and found partially nude or nude. I know you don't want to talk a lot about your crimes, but if someone asks you why, how did you get here and why did you do this? What would be your, I know you've had a lot of time to think about this in prison. When someone asks you, hey Chester, why? What's the why?
I think of it is that, you know, basically just to ask a question. I mean, when I was out there, I ain't gonna sit here and lie and say that I didn't have a drug habit. I had a drug habit. And like I say, you know, they alleged that I did that. But the thing of it is, I was selling drugs out there. And I was also selling, making money, also start using drugs. So, like I say, you know, it's a person's state of mind when they own drugs is totally different than when they as a normal person, because you don't think. That's basically the only thing I can say for that.
What you're saying, Chester, is people have to understand the situation. You're in the city, you're in the hood, you're in the urban, you know, urban area. You're associating with people who are in the drug culture. And you're saying basically when you're addicted to drugs, you're selling drugs, sometimes violence, would it be safe to say sometimes violence comes along with that?
Oh, you know, basically violence, I mean, that type of life out there, I mean, a lot of people think that a certain person commits a murder, it'd be that person. But you got to realize a lot of people who's on drugs, this is what they don't talk about. This is what they know, but they ain't going to put it out there that individual have robbed other people to get the money. I guess you could say, let's say if you rob me, you take my money, and I'm driving around out there, or if I see you or whatever, that what you think is going to happen?
I got you. So that's just what I'm saying, is that's part of the game. Like violence, violent crime is kind of part of the game, right?
I mean, you don't have to be in a gang. You don't have to be. I mean, it's a totally different world out there.
I got you.
I mean, it's a world that you wouldn't believe. People think because they see movies and all, they acting and all that. Hey, that's reality out there in the real world.
Yeah,
that's not no game. That's people. You see them on Skid Row, drug addiction. Is really serious.
So how exactly did Chester Turner get caught? He was already in prison when he got sent to LA County Prison for these crimes.
Originally, Chester Turner was convicted of 11 murders because of a DNA hit. After I had a discussion with him today, he told me he ended up in prison because of a rape. A prostitute who he refused to pay called the police and told them that he raped her. He was actually arrested and convicted for that rape and sentenced to 9 years in prison. While he was in prison, they did a DNA check and it hit on 11 victims. So while he was in prison, he was taken to court, taken to trial, and convicted of 11 murders and sentenced to death. Sometime later, while he was in prison, he was also accused, tried, and convicted of 4 more murders, totaling 15. Again, all tied to him by DNA. Since then, they dropped 1 murder of an unborn baby, but he sits now in prison convicted of 14 murders. All thanks to DNA. When serial killers have sex with their victims, and they leave DNA inside their bodies, they kind of have a death wish in a sense, because they know eventually they're going to get caught. The serial killers that are smart don't leave DNA. Chester Turner left DNA at almost every crime scene. And when he went to prison, it was easily matched to several victims.
The use of DNA to be able to capture criminals is sort of a more recent thing. I mean, take us back 50 years ago, we didn't have the ability to use DNA to help put criminals behind bars.
Well, I mean, think about it. If he commits these murders 20 years before, there is no DNA technology, which means he easily gets away with this crime spree. That begs to ask the question that we all should ask is, how many of these murders could have been solved if we just had this DNA technology? You know, I truly believe that every inmate in jail, every inmate in prison should have a DNA test, and it should be entered into a system. And the more we do that, I think the more we can solve some of these cold cases. But yes, prior to DNA, Chester Turner, the Southside Slayer, gets away with this crime spree. Next up, we're going to speak to Norm Miller, a gang specialist from Florida, who will give us some insight into the gang activity of Chester Turner. And we will be wrapping up our conversation with Chester Turner, the Southside Slayer. We're about to talk with Norm Miller, a gang specialist, who will give us some insight into this part of Chester Turner's life. Norm Miller, what's up, man?
Hey, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time tonight. I appreciate it. What is your background? What do you do, and how are you an expert on gangs?
I've been working gangs for 20 plus years. Started out with the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office, and now presently I work for the state attorney's office under the direction of Bruce Bartlett, the state attorney, and I'm an investigator, and I'm assigned to the gang prosecution unit. In addition to that, I've been traveling and studying gangs for 20 plus years and working them actively myself, and you know, involved with the prosecution of gangs, and teaching gangs across the United States and Canada now, for that matter.
We're talking about Chester Turner, the Southside Slayer, convicted of 15 murders. He's probably killed over 30. but his gang name was Tutu, and he started out in a gang in South Central LA. So my biggest question for you, Norm, is it possible, or do you see it as a possibility, that a guy gets involved in a gang and ends up being a serial killer? Talk to us about that whole, unpack that whole box.
Well, I mean, absolutely could be possible because of the dynamic of it. I mean, this guy was brutal and had a taste for killing. That would be obviously that he would be, you know, a chosen assassin and probably enjoy doing it. During the 80s, when he would have been in the gangs, crack cocaine had just hit. So it was violent times. So it wouldn't be too far from a stretch to say, yeah, it's absolutely possible.
And what gangs would have been operating at that time in South Central L.A.? What would be the big gangs?
Well, the two primary big gangs in South Central L.A. were Bloods and Crips. I mean, but you had a host of others. I mean, 18th Street was around there. You know, quite a few Hispanic gangs. But, you know, the most infamous, if you would say, would be Bloods and Crips. Those were the two dominant ones because of the activity. And once crack really hit that area is when the explosion is, because then that became an influx of cash because of the quick money they made from crack. It's violent times. I mean, during that, there was a huge gang war. You had a Hispanic versus African-American war going on. You had gang on gang, and you even had gang with the conflicts within the gangs. You know, we had notoriously Crips fighting one another. You know, and you had other smaller groups who were around the area who were always fighting for territory. And like I said, when crack hit, it was about drugs and about money.
And how have the gangs changed since the time Chester Turner would have been involved in gangs and today? Is it the same? Has it gotten better? Has it gotten worse? How is it today?
In its design, there hasn't been much change. The difference is that social media and music have now become the nexus to help drive this and made it more popular. Now you've got groups that who can connect. When crack hit in the 80s, we saw groups from L.A. migrating to other areas in search of expanding their drug territories. So you had actual, you know, Denver Lane Bloods and Rolling 60 Crips who might move to some sleepy town in Idaho to help set up a drug empire. But the difference now is that option is so much easier because of the internet and because of social media.
So is the gang lifestyle just as bad as it was in the 80s, 90s? Is it, have law enforcement kind of knocked it down a little bit, or is it still thriving out there?
Well, it's a cultural thing. It ebbs and it flows. I mean, there's periods of the time where law enforcement does a really good job of keeping it in check, and then there's other times when it starts to explode. And I think we're coming into an explosion. You look at Chicago and the things that are going on there. I mean, they're averaging 400 to 500 gang-related homicides a year. That's gang-related, not just regular homicides, something that has to do within the gang. And that's a phenomenon where they went in and removed a lot of the established housing projects that a lot of these gangs resided in and did some urban renewal. So now we have a really big turf war going on. And it's been violent.
And do you say gangs are heavily involved in prisons like San Quentin Prison, where Chester Turner is housed right now? Is there a lot of gang activity inside prison?
Absolutely. It's prisons are their own little world themselves. And when you go into prison, if you are a gang member on the street, whatever gang you associate with, all beef is set aside for the most part. So if you're a Blood and you're a Blood from, you know, L.A. and you happen to be a Blood from Chicago and you get arrested in L.A., you're going to link up with those same Bloods, because it's you know, all for one and one for all pretty much in prison, because it's segregated by race and by gang.
Awesome. Well, listen, Norm, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for taking the appreciate time tonight. It. We appreciate it. Thank you.
All righty.
All right, man. Bye.
Bye.
What kind of gang were you involved in?
The time we were called Hoover Crip.
Hoover Crip?
Yeah, Hoover Gangster Crip. But now we're criminal. Now we call criminals. So we basically CKBK, anybody killers now. So
you're still gang affiliated?
Right now, I'm not gang banging. I still got my tattoos on my body, my hood on my body, and all that. come to find out, I'm 54 years old.
Yeah.
And I don't have time for all that.
Mm-hmm. I get it. You're in San Quentin, man. That's the fucking big house. You're on death row. What is it like to be on death row in San Quentin?
I mean, it's no picnic. I mean, and like I said, you never know what's going to go on every day, you know. I mean, I spend a lot of my time is being careful. I got to always watch my back on the yard. Being on death row, you know, it's like when I first got here, I was a little leery because you get off the bus, the first place you got to go to is the AC, and stay in the AC for orientation. Mm-hmm. And it's like...
Is that called the Adjustment Center?
Yes, the Adjustment Center. Mm-hmm. So I was in the Adjustment Center for about almost two or three months before they sent me over here to East Block. East Block is one of the main... is the condemned unit. East Block and Donner is a condemned unit. So when I got here, it's like they know who you are because they see the news. Everybody got TVs. They get newspaper. Mm-hmm. My case was always in the news, so mm-hmm. they know who I was.
So are you in a single? Are you in a single man cell, Chester?
Yes, I am.
Are you locked up in your cell most of the day?
I'm locked in my cell most of the day.
Can you see people? So like, can you see your neighbors?
No, I can't see my neighbor. We have to make gadgets, like break a piece of mirror, make a little piece of mirror and fold it, where we can stick it between the little grooves between the bars, where we could see out to see who's walking down the tier.
I got you. What do you think about this? When you lay your head on your pillow at night, what do you think about that you are a serial killer?
Mentally, we're through a lot of changes. You know, it's like mentally, you know, I sit there, I think about it, and don't think that. I don't have no conscience. I have a conscience. I mean, reality, you know, I think about how people think about me, that I'd have been painted to be this, way out, this person that you can't trust, you can't be around, or he gonna do something to you.
Gotcha.
And I'm like, please, come on now. I'm just like any average other person you have a conversation with.
So, but you've killed more people probably than Son of Sam, David Berkowitz, BTK, Charles Manson, who really didn't kill anybody, maybe even Jeffrey Dahmer. What are your thoughts on that?
I never thought about it.
That's crazy as hell.
Yeah, I know. I never thought about that.
Yeah.
Yes. It really gave me something to think about right there.
Are you remorseful for your crimes?
Yes, I am. I mean, for my crimes, you know, I'm remorseful, and like I said, you know, I'm paying every day I wake up, I look at where I'm at, and I'm stuck in this one little box, this one little cage, and every day I'm doing the same old thing every day. You have no life. I'm watching people die in here. People my age mm-hmm. having heart attacks. Mm. People who done had enough and can't take this. They had people that commit suicide and hung themselves. You had people in here that overdosed. And, I mean, you wouldn't believe all the things that done happened here. And we had a couple people that was killed on the yard.
Hey, Chester, we're going to get cut off here.
Okay.
All right, talk to you soon, brother. Yep.
Okay.
Why is San Quentin such a famous prison?
I don't know why, but San Quentin has a mystique about it. Like, people think it's a famous prison. It does have an incredible setting. It sets right near the water, not too far from Alcatraz. and a lot of famous inmates have been there. But San Quentin is an anomaly in itself that it houses death row in California, and it has the most unique setting of any prison that I've ever been to. Johnny Cash wrote a song about it, did a performance there. It's just a super interesting prison.
Chester talks to us about the area he grew up in and how he didn't get an education, was exposed to gang life and all that.
You know, it's hard for a lot of us to picture ourselves in that situation. I don't know where any of us grew up in, but I grew up in the hood, East Cleveland. I know what it's like to grow up in an inner city. I know what it's like to have gang members and shootouts outside your window. I know what it's like to get robbed on the way to school at knife point myself in grade school. I know what it's like to have people break into your house at night. He really doesn't have a lot of hope. And when you're in that situation, you almost become suicidal. But what it allows you to do is have no reason to care. You have nothing to lose. So when you get in a situation where you have nothing to lose, you're okay with robbing banks, committing felonies, or abducting women. Because what's the worst thing that can happen to you? You're going to go to prison where you get 3 meals a day, a place to sleep, and medical benefits, and you're kind of taken care of. In some ways, prison is better than the life these guys lived on the outside. I mean, we don't condone the actions of Chester Turner, but if you're really trying to understand the why, if you really are asking that question, how or why can someone do this, you have to put yourself in their position. And his position is very bleak. And when you're in that position, you don't have a lot to lose. And that's how some of these guys end up committing these crimes and ending up in prison. He deserves to be where he is. But that's probably his mentality as to how he got there. Chester Turner sits on death row in San Quentin Prison, California, serving out his sentence. He's working on his appeal, but the chances of him getting out are very unlikely. He sits in a 4x6 cell where he spends most of his time, including eating all of his meals. It's a very good chance Chester Turner will die at San Quentin Prison. Thanks for listening to Where the Bodies Are Buried, and remember to subscribe to receive updates on new episodes. This podcast is produced by Grinning Dog and Audio Up.